And we're back.
Welcome to No Direction Beyond, your source for Starfinder's news review and reviews. I'm Alexander Gunas, No Direction's very own everyman gamer, and I'm joined, as always, by the most intrepid Starfinder this side of the galaxy, James.
Hi, I'm James. I used to write Code Switch.
All right. So, the last time we were here, James and I suffered for you. I hope you enjoyed our suffering. We don't want to suffer anymore. As a matter of fact, we're doing the opposite. We're going to do a shallow dive of the Starfinder 2nd Edition playtest, the new playtest book that's out.
Yay, I'm excited. Also, I did eat most of those sauces. They're very good. The really spicy one.
It was great. Between then and now, James had a birthday party, and like literally he had the sauces out, and I was like, are any of our friends brave enough to try the bomb after we told them we almost died? I don't think any of them were they?
No, they're not stupid.
No, we're the dumb ones in the friend group. It's cool. But we're here to look over the Starfinder 2nd Edition playtest book. And I specifically called out that this is a shallow dive rather than a deep dive. James, do you want to tell our listeners a little bit about what a shallow dive means?
All right, a shallow dive means we're not going to go in-depth into builds or specific numbers. This is much more about the vibe of certain sections of it and what your initial kind of gut reaction to things are, which is valuable, and it shows, I think, like what's important. And it also stops us from being here for 2.5 hours debating modifier types, which is not good radio, and I don't want to do that.
Definitely. And so if you stick with us to the very end of the show, we're going to tell you about our Starfinder 2nd Edition playtest extravagant lined up for like what we're doing for the next couple of months. Because the reason we're not going into a deep dive here is because you're going to get a lot of content from us. All of our episodes for the next 4 months are going to be about this playtest book. And as a result, we didn't want to burn through everything in a single night and then be like, oh, we already talked about this on the show.
Yeah, also, I don't think we'd get, like, a significant amount of dive into certain things. Like, there's so many feats, so many spells. Like, you could do almost entire shows based on those themselves. So, it's not even
really
worth it. The stuff I think that's important is going to kind of rise as we go through things like character creation and et cetera, so.
Yeah. And that's one thing to talk about. One of our shows that we have planned for the next couple months is a character creation show. So you'll get to see more of that kind of stuff there. But we're just going to go over like the introduction stuff, which is a good way to segue into the first chapter. There's an introduction that talks a bit about Starfinder. It's got like a book breakdown. So like, let's look at the breakdown, James, in the book, and let's figure out how we want to break this down for our audience.
Wait, do you mean table? Oh, wait, there is actually something that says book breakdown. You know,
yeah, it literally says book breakdown.
Yeah,
we're gonna break that book.
I will admit, I did read the book. I did plan much more time, but then I got COVID and was unable to do anything for about a week and a half. So that was a significant portion of time. So where there's gaps, I will make it plain and clear.
No problem. That's what I'm here for. I fill the gaps.
Yeah, I mean, ancestors. I mean, probably just chronologically, because that's the easiest way to go back and forth. Ancestries is probably a good place to start.
All right, let me call Dustin and ask him what order they wrote these chapters in so we can do them chronologically. But no, I know you meant sequentially. I'm just giving you Hell Knights.
Oh, you're right. I've been outwitted. I'm a fool. Call me Bobo the Clown.
Right, I know you don't have to bleep that because it was a totally relevant lore drop. All right, so book breakdown. The chapters in this book are ancestries, classes, skills and feats, equipment, spells, and other relevant rules sections like equipment and stuff. So that's kind of how we're going to look at it. I know, James, you haven't really seen a whole lot of the 2nd Edition Pathfinder Core rulebook, but this pretty much mirrors how Player Core 2 is set, or Player Core 1 is set up. For the new stuff.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, some of it was good. I mean, part of it is just like what the bonuses are, negatives are, and which ones stack. Those are things that I will eventually get to, you know?
Starfinder developer Dustin Knight is in chat saying, start with weapons if we're going to do chronologically. And nah, we're going to start with ancestries because ancestries are great.
I mean, I do have thoughts about weapons. But
I'm excited to hear your thoughts because you love guns. I don't know anybody who loves Starfinder guns more than you, James.
Oh, thank you.
All right. So I like the ancestries overall. To give a brief overview of the ones that they have in this book, because there's actually more than there was in the Starfinder 1st Edition Core Rulebook. You've got androids, Barathus, humans, Kasathas, Lashuntas, Katras, Shirins, Skittermanders, Vesks, and Yasoki. You also have two universal heritages in the Bolrai and the Prismini. I think this is pretty cool. Yeah, Prismini does sound funny. Yeah, there's a lot. There's a lot in this book. I see Descriptivist in chat going, what? That's so many. That's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. That is two more than the Pathfinder second edition, first edition, second edition player war one. Sorry, there's so many words in that sentence. But yeah, there's actually a bunch of newcomers in this book too, like that have never been core before. Isn't that right, James?
Yeah, I mean, the two new ones, like Borai and Prismeni, but also Patra, which got a lot of lead up because of the Vesk expansion of that part of the setting.
Yeah, definitely. For those who don't know, the Starfinders have been doing a lot of stuff in the Vesk system that basically led to, I think it's Vesk 3 or 4, the Patra homeworld, declaring their independence. Maybe it's 5. It's one of the Vesk planets declared their independence. And so now Patra are core. They're considered a Pact Worlds race, but it's kind of like how Hawaii is a United States state in the middle of the ocean, except, you know, the Patra were liberated rather than what happened in Hawaii.
Right. Totally.
Right. Totally. Meanwhile, you have the Patra as core. You also have Skittermanders, which are core, which I am happy to see that.
It's fine. It mimics the goblins becoming a playable race in 2E, Pathfinder 2E for me.
Yeah, I feel like Skittermanders make a little more sense because like they weren't portrayed as like mostly villains, you know, because like
horse murdering fire enthusiast, yes.
Yeah, essentially. And the other big new one is the Barathu, which, you know, good on the Starfinder team for like deciding that we're going to take something that's really alien and make it core. I think that Barathu is a great fit.
Yeah, and also things that natural fly at low levels.
Yeah, right. So that's actually a big deal if you're coming from Pathfinder 2nd Edition, because in Pathfinder 2nd Edition, flying is like heavily staged out. Like you start being able to do like hover jumps, and then you get like gliding, and then you get like flying by like level 13. And in Starfinder, it's like, nah, you can just do it. And I don't know about you, but I like that better.
Yeah, 100%. Also, it's part of the feel of a Starfinder where flight really isn't all that crazy. I mean, later on in the book, they go over armor upgrades, and the one for jetpack is like third level.
Yeah, it's very low. So you could fly very early. Now, the other thing that's worth mentioning is that the Bolrai, which is one of the two new universal heritages, is actually a returning race, now turned species, now heritage. Back in Starfinder first edition, the Bolrai were a race that were added in the Pact Worlds guide. So if you want to go from Starfinder, it's actually 11 being converted here, which is pretty cool. And I think Prismini are new. Like,
they're Driftgaunzi.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, I can't remember. They might have been printed in one of the last two adventure paths. Like, I don't recall, but I'm 90% certain that they're brand new, which is cool. Like James said, they are essentially like Asmars or Gaunzi or Tieflings of the Drift, which I like that. That's awesome.
Yeah, I mean, it plays to the whole expansion of the Drift as an actual dimension demiplane place that you can actually visit and exist in. Kind of like the 40K warp, but like seems like you could actually live there instead of just getting eviscerated.
Oh, see, I should know that. They were printed in Starfinder. In chat, they're confirming that I was correct and that Prismeni were printed in Starfinder AP 49, A Light in the Dark. I should know that because that's the adventure path that I wrote for. I didn't write that, but yeah. So definitely. So like if you're looking at it from Starfinder stuff from first edition into second edition, you actually have 12 options here. But now that Prismeni and Bolrai are heritages, you can slap them on whatever you want, which is pretty cool.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like the art for it kind of like gives the idea of what it is. I think it's like an Ahsoki, and it just kind of fits in my mind what they are, but it could be literally
anything. It's so good. My favorite part about this is that in Starfinder, there was like this thing for a while where people were like, why is Quig look like he's like a rat person? But then all these other Yasoki with like bipedal regular feet are here and like with giant heads, and what does that mean? And like eventually one of the books, they were like, yeah, a whole bunch of different rat species just call themselves Yasoki because it's easier now. It's like, all right, that's out. And this is one of them. Look at that guy with his giant head. Good boy.
100%. Same thing with the Patra. Like, it, yeah. Like, their redesigns, I think, are notable. I don't know how many of them I physically like, but I don't hate them. I think they're fine and appropriate. Unlike the Dromedai, those can stay in space.
Definitely. I feel like Dai, the new iconic Solarian, is like a classic Patra. Like, they look kind of more like a classic cat from first edition. But then, like, this book, this is actually a good place to start in some of the new content that they have for Ancestries. They have heritages, and one of them is the instantly popular Sandcat heritage, where they are small Patra instead of being medium creatures. And that's the character that's like on the front art for it. And they look way more cat-like. They've got a big bushy tail, like big whole thing.
I'm just getting it up on the screen from the
Oh, that's fine. That's totally cool. I think that the ancestries they have are really cool. One of the things I really like, James and I are playing in a first edition Pathfinder game with our friends right now, and he keeps laughing at me because I have a cleric in that game who's lawful good and follows a million codes of conducts. And I had like entire paragraphs where I wrote like all the flowery codes of conducts from first edition, and I could never remember, and I'd have to sit there for like 5 minutes deciphering my own code to try to figure out how my character would react in a situation. I love that edicts and anathema are a thing in second edition, and all of the ancestries, like in Pathfinder, have like a little sentence where it's like, these are common values that people of this species have, and or in this case, this ancestry have. I really like that. It makes my life so much easier.
Yeah. I mean, you know, it's variability is always welcome.
Yeah. Yes, it is very good. Mm-hmm. Now, why don't we talk a bit about some of the feats, right? Like, you just, perfect segue. You did fantastic. I approve of you.
Thank you. I'm trying hard.
I know, you did great. But there's so basically, when you're looking at options, if you're a Starfinder player looking to start 2E, everything I'm about to say is like basic stuff for Pathfinder second edition players, so bear with us here. But you have basically two major options at first level. You have a heritage, which is kind of like a summary of like your ethnic group and your culture and like where you grew up kind of a thing, as like a generic option that's added to you. And then there's also ancestry feats. You get one at first level, you get another one every four levels there afterwards. So like 5, 9, 13, 17, et cetera. There's a lot of cool stuff. Is there any that caught your eye, James?
It was more just the whole change in how ancestries work from Starfinder 182e, because I you know, start with the android because that's what I have the most experience playing with, and seeing a fair amount of those abilities stripped out and re-put back in as feats at first felt jarring, but in general the feats via ancestry are more powerful
than
the base things were, so it feels like you're losing stuff and you're losing some upfront utility, but it is a system that I think allows you to have more of a character that is yours, and there's some stuff that definitely like rises to the top. Like there's always a lore feat for, I think, ancient and the ancestries, which is like, cool, I guess you can be your people nerd. There's other better ones that are more usable. Let me say that one. With like, for instance, I'm looking at the Barathru where they can make medicines by just eating stuff and ingesting that. So, they really run the gamut.
Yeah, definitely. One of the things that I like to describe when it comes to like ancestry feats is like people who get upset that there's only one versus four. It feels to me like, you know, that meme of the little girl where she's got the one beaker and then the tall beaker and like which one is bigger, and she mm-hmm. points to the tall one, like object permanence, basic stuff. Like that's what it reminds me of, because like in Pathfinder first edition and even in Starfinder, your average racial trait, species trait was +2 bonus to a couple little things, and like a lot of these are a lot more applicable. But the one thing I will say that I feel I do identify with the people who like miss those number traits, because as our friend Nate says often, bigger number, better person.
I mean, the thing I like about more of the ancestry feats are that a lot more of them are active.
Yes.
Which totally. Is just more fun. Like the old Spathinae from the first edition of Starfinder, that compression ability, I just love. Because it's an active ability where I can just be a nuisance and just cause property damage.
Just a problem. Dustin is yelling at me in chat saying, how dare you say that about bigger number, better person when you have an entire character built on the Foxfire SBC's feet. Now, how about anything that you saw that wasn't a thing that you were like a big fan of? Like, because we talked about all the cool stuff. Anything that didn't catch your eye, you're like, ooh, I don't like this choice.
No, as far as ancestries, I think everything was in line with expectations. I did like a lot of the choices. I think the telepathy part is for like as a like key component of like Lashinta and Sheeran is yes, true to form. It's
Yeah.
kind of boring, but
Yeah,
it's true
no,
to form.
totally.
But in
Yeah,
general, I
no, it's
think it's
good.
good.
Yeah. I think that ability is always going to be good. Like, and I think it's, I like how it's spelled out here. I in general, I like all of the racial, the ancestry feats that are here. I think all the stuff feels really cool. One of the ones that I'm a really big fan of is there's a high level Barathu one called Combine at 17th level, where you could just like Voltron with another player character or another creature, and you become like it's very cool. You like give them bonuses, you make them bigger. Like there's a lot of really good flavor in the ancestry feats that just it feels.
As far as flavor, the Vesk, I think, got a lot of things that made them into dinosaurs and made them a lot more scary. Because there was, at first, Vesk were very scary creatures, and then they were looking like John McClane from McClane from Die Hard, you know, torn up shirt, but they're like flipping pancakes, and they kind of got softified. And a lot of these ancestry feats are a lot more like, yeah, I'm gonna smell blood and just track you for hours and rip you in half. And like, wow, that's incredibly violent. But very interesting for a core race to just be so overtly powered in their feats and choices.
The Vesk are one of the two ancestries that have something that I don't like in the design for. The other one is the Patra. So for Vesk, I don't like all the feats that require you to worship Diametrash, the god of war, the best god of war. That doesn't feel ancestry to me. That feels like it should be like a general feat or like an archetype. Like I feel like the Vesk are not portrayed in a way that they are unanimously like zealots, and I don't like that being an ancestry option. To me, ancestry should have to do with like who you are and be a little bit more cultural agnostic. And that cultural agnosticism is the other problem I have with some of the other options. I love this the Sand Roamer Patra art, the cute little cat who's small. I do not like the mechanic that being small is tied to a heritage, because that means that every small Patra has to be completely and utterly uniform in their options. It's the same problem I have with the ant gnoll for the gnolls in Pathfinder. It's just like, if you're gonna choose about something about how your body looks, that should not be an option that I pick. That should just be a thing I can choose when I make my character. If they made an option that said like diverse bodies, Patra get to choose whether they're small or medium at first level, and they took, because like being small or medium doesn't give any power benefits in this edition at all. Like there's no plus one bonus for hitting something for being small. There's no minus four for being too small when people grab you. Like it's just flavor. Like and interacts with like size-based effects. So I would rather see that removed and not be like your body type should not be tied to an option you take, in my opinion. Those are the two things that the two pieces of feedback that I would have for these sections. Get out the religious stuff, because that to me goes beyond like what ancestry stuff should be, and get out the body size stuff. Other than that, this is great. Like I think that you're right that the Vesk have amazing options, and I want to call out the Sheeran for having some of the coolest like body type, like, because it's weird, because like I don't like the Sandcat Patra where it's like you're small, like, because that's like your, I don't know, it's like your size. I'm not a fan of that one, but I like the one heritage is that's like, oh, you have wings, like that's cool. I like that one. So I don't know, I'm not very consistent.
As you know, you could have your opinion. You're more than welcome to your opinion.
It's something about size, like the actual like height of your body, that feels too much like if you wanted to portray someone who was like a little person or whatever. Like I just don't think size should be a thing that's on a heritage. I don't like that, but I don't know. I don't
I
make
don't know.
sense.
I
It's
mean,
fine.
certain heritages of animals just get bigger or smaller depending on where they are, right?
That's fair.
Island gigantism and vice versa. Like, it happens.
And this is a good time to remind you all that everything we say is our opinions and not like designed flat fact. This is just like our preferences.
Yeah,
So,
people can disagree and still be correct.
yeah, and I reserve the right to have an opinion that you find wrong without it actually being wrong, because it's an opinion. Cool
Exactly.
stuff.
100%.
Now, speaking of other stuff that we can be wrong about, you want to move to classes?
Yeah, sure. I could be wrong about classes all day.
All day. Okay. So, one of the things that's been a topic of contention on Reddit and other places where Starfinders like to talk is the number of classes in this book compared to the Pathfinder, or the Starfinder First Edition Core Rulebook. Sorry, there's so many games and editions now that I'm going to mix them all up, and it is what it is. But the original book had Envoy, Mystic, Operative, Soldier, Solarian, Technomancer, and Mechanic was the original seven.
Yep.
This book drops Technomancer and Mechanic and adds Witchwarper.
Woo!
Woo! What are your thoughts?
I'm a fan. Yeah. I don't see the design space where you can have a precog as well as a Witchwarper, and Technomancer's, I think, identity is also hard in a game where you're linking it to ninth level spells. And
but you can. Spells. So in the design paradigm for this, every class has like a specific like subclass option they pick, right? Mm-hmm. It's a leadership style for an envoy. It's a connection for a mystic. It's an operative specialization for an operative. The Witch Warpers is called anchors, and one of the anchors is called precog.
Yeah, yep, 100%. Yeah.
So they're here. They're both here. I love it. And also, like, to me, this just confirms that one of their early books is going to be an equipment book, right? Like, you don't take the two tech-based classes, the Technomancer and the Mechanic, and pull them from the core and think, oh, they're gone forever. You think, like, oh, they're going to make an equipment book. I see what you're doing, Paizo. I get you. I know how you think.
I mean, they have to. There's not a lot of weapons.
There's really not. Are we skipping ahead?
No. It's just, you know, I call them as I see them. There's an adequate amount of weapons for playtesting.
Yeah. We're getting added in the chat that it's already been announced at Gen Con that there's going to be a playtest before the actual game comes out where you can playtest the Mechanic and the Technomancer. Like, it's pretty quick. The release schedule for this edition is wild, let me tell you. But we're talking about it here. It's fine. Now, let's talk about some of the classes. I know that you are a big fan of envoys, and I know you like soldiers, and I know you like witch warpers. Is that true?
Yes.
Is there anything else you want to talk about?
I think the Solarian had the redo of the Solarian in the second edition, I think, is very good.
I'll tell you what, my friend, you pick where we start. Let's begin the universe hopping.
Yeah, wait, universe hopping. Wait, does that mean witch warper? Can I go to the the Solarian?
I don't.
I'm going to go to the Solarian. Yeah, I'm going to do the Solarian.
Then I'll do Witch Warper second.
Cool. The Solarian, they changed what you can do with your Solarian powers. It's not just the blade. You can make it a blade or weapon. You get a lot of choices. It's kind of like some of the occult classes from first edition Pathfinder, where you can just manifest weapons, which is very good. A lot of their feats as they advance still deal with the dichotomy of alignment. The terms are still getting used to. It's not just graviton and photon, but they're basically versions of that. And using those to switch and getting new abilities. A lot of these things are very fun actions that a lot of the feats are things that change your base action economy. They're not all big flashy like you'd expect from a Solarian, especially in its very early incarnation, where it was a lot of, I do this thing and I lift the world and I make a fireball explode and everybody's a black hole. And you still get a lot of those things. You don't lose them. But compared to a lot of other classes, you're not getting new things as so much as refinements on improving new things. Like, they have a whole bunch of things dedicated to making shields usable with less input from you with higher value.
Definitely.
Which just, it feels good. As somebody who doesn't like 2E shields, these seem a bit more usable.
Can just hit the button on your chest and one hit point. Let's go.
Yeah, there's some things that are, they're not a lot of things that are like number based, and some of them are kind of like but I think in general it's a really strong fiction for that class to be able just to be better at martial combat and kind of focus on that and expanding their ability from being a martial focused character into the stellar powers versus the other way around, where you have these great stellar powers and you're trying to figure out how to make them work with your weapon set.
Yeah, and I think what's really interesting about it too is like this version of the Solarian like leans really hard into these cool like supernatural powers. It's not that the other version didn't, like in 2E, but like for the most part it was just I swing with my weapon and I stellar charge. But like this is like here's a whole bunch of like really cool abilities, like it synergizes a lot well with like a melee focus versus a range focus. The other thing I really like is the new Solarian arrangements mechanic, where you kind of pick the embodiment of like this of solar cycles and forces that you have. So and like
instead of having to go three levels, you're just one or the other.
Yeah, it's like, oh, I could be Degregant and I embody Graviton and like the destruction of all things, or I could be Radiant and embody Photon, or I could be Balanced. And what I really like about this is that this opens up the door to see more paradigms in the future. Like in Starfinder First Edition, we had like energy versus like, God, I can't remember what the opposite was, but there was one for like gaining energy and losing energy, and there was one for like harmony and disharmony, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah, 100%.
I honestly wouldn't be surprised if there's a future where we see the Vanguard as a Solarian arrangement. I would see that and I would think, oh, that's sensible, that's cool, you know?
Yeah. Also, there was consideration that a lot of the fun abilities for the Solarian on a successful save still do cool things.
Yeah. No, totally. Like if someone gets a six, like you basically have to critical fail most of them for nothing to happen, yeah. which is not likely.
Big improvement from Starfinder First Edition, where a lot of the times if it was a successful save, nothing happened and you did all that for nothing.
Yep.
So very much improved.
Do you have a favorite Solarian feat or ability?
So my favorite ability is like one of their first ones that they get that they're able to choose, the binauric thingy where they get to do a melee and a ranged weapon and fight with those and get bonuses on those attacks, and not have them and like get bonuses from attacking both of them.
That's like twin weapons where you can like dual wield with your Solarian weapons, right?
Yeah, I
like that one.
Cool. It just feels like it leans into that thing where you're really good at being a martial character. Even though it's really early on.
I like this is gonna sound weird. I like the fact that Zenith revelations are not like some special thing that you never really get to use anymore. Like Wormhole, which was a really good Zenith revelation in First Edition, appears as just a regular 12th level feed, and you get to like open a rift in space and connect the two, and like you step into one, your ally comes out the other side. It's great. I love that.
Yeah, just a lot of, like I said, I think the redesign of it is very good.
Let's talk about another class. My turn. I'm picking Witch Warper. I love Witch Warper. I love Witch Warper, but there's also stuff about Witch Warper that I wish was a little bit different. But I think that this is a better version of the class than what we got in both versions in First Edition. Like I think this is better than the enhanced one, personally.
So we're gonna be opposite here.
Oh, you like the enhanced one better?
Yes.
Oh. I would love to hear your opinion on it.
You go first, and then I'll butt in.
I like Quantum Field. I think Quantum Field is like a really cool mechanic for like, because like the whole point of the Witch Warper in 1E was that it was like the battlefield tactician and like controlling all the things, but it kind of didn't really work with how they do saving throws, and I feel like it would be really rough here too. I like the idea that you pick a circle and you're like, this is my personal bubble of reality. You're in it. Time to bend my will. That's cool. I like that. I think the paradoxes are neat. The flavor between like picking gap influence versus precog versus anomaly is fun. And I love the anchor mechanic. Like I think that like from you're laughing. I'm guessing you hate that mechanic. I like the anchor mechanic because I feel like it adds a really interesting bit of lore where like you're trying to anchor yourself in one moment. It's very Everything Everywhere All at Once, where Evelyn's character is like, her brain is hopping through the multiverse of possibilities, and she needs her husband's words to ground her in her reality. And like, that's what's able to help her like realize how to solve all the problems and save the day. I think those are all really cool.
Yeah, I mean, I don't get me wrong, I like the feel of it. I think it's complicated, and not in a fun way.
Oh,
I think it's the warp reality. I don't like it because it is a 15-foot bubble where a fair amount of the choices don't work unless somebody is actively punching you. it's also a concentrate, so you have to keep it up, and then there's actions that you take to keep up this warp field. The ability to do warp spells from it is like the saving grace of it that makes it usable. But a lot of the things for it just are not going to be usable most of the time.
Yeah.
Also, Anchor, I think, is written confusingly. It's explained in like a sidebar in the main body, and then it gives a trait called anchoring, which is
Yeah.
used to also help with keeping qu your quantum field up. So there's a lot of loop through that was very confusing to read through. Because I also did not
Well,
know if they were Pathfinder 2E terms.
That's a good point. Yeah, that's fair. Nah, that's those are all like anchoring and zone are all new. It's interesting because in Pathfinder second edition, they would have like a sidebar and everything that define, I guess it's here. It's on page 226 where it defines the new terms, so it's got anchoring and zone. I don't know. I can see what you mean because I have that same reaction every time I read the psychic in Pathfinder second edition. Like it's got like 12 mechanics and all of them are like oozing with so much flavor that the flavor is more important to the designer than the actual like elegance of the mechanics. And if that's how you feel about that one, I respect that.
Yeah, like I said, I haven't actually played one. I'm also would probably figure it out, but as somebody who has very little 2E knowledge, especially with how it Pathfinder 2E knowledge with how
Yeah.
it's become, seeing a box in the middle that talks about anchoring and then it presents anchors, but then it gives a sidebar about anchor traits, led me to believe for a while that it was a Pathfinder 2E thing as well. That
Yeah.
there was also a thing there,
Yeah.
and because they're not, they didn't want to extend page count unnecessarily, like I get it, but it threw me for a loop.
Yeah. Did you see anything about the class that you really liked?
I mean, the ability to like change your spells, I think, is cool because I feel like that's something I don't hear a lot happening in 2E, which I'm guessing is just because there's less meta magic, Pathfinder
Yeah.
2E.
Yeah, there's a couple of meta magic in this one. They're called spell shapes now. So like shifting energy at 10th level is a good example of one. I think that the designers are going to have to be careful with this class because it's going to be very easy to try to focus on flavor over fun. I think that it's got a lot of little places where it's like, oh, wouldn't it be cool if I could do this? And it's kind of like the same problem the first edition Witchwarper had, where they wanted it to do everything, so they made it so weak that it couldn't do anything. You know what I mean? Like, we actively have. I have two different Witchwarper players in my Starfinder game that I've split into like two separate groups where there's a four player group and another four player group. Both groups have a Witchwarper. Neither of them will use Infinite Worlds because of that very reason. And I really think that like I that you have to make that base ability feel good and fun. And I think one of the things that's kind of tricky is like all spellcaster classes have like the focus spell mechanic. And I think that having it interact too much with your quantum field is also probably not a good idea.
Yeah, so that you get some exclusivity with those abilities.
No, I can see what you mean, and I agree with you. I think that
Also,
that's
would you
good
say that your
feedback.
first edition Witchwarper players are just weak? Because I mean,
Maybe.
I played one and I used that ability a lot. I used that to just create a battlefield that made it impossible to attack me.
I thought it was really funny when you locked Peter into a room. That was really funny.
Yeah, with just ice cubes. So like there's a lot of utility in the Witchwarper. It's hard to the first edition hard Witchwarper. It's hard to get out of it because it's very easy to get in your way to go, this isn't a spell that does damage. And if you look at the
Yeah.
damaging options, they're generally kind of bad.
Yeah,
But
that's fair.
when you change it to a control aspect, the Witchwarper first edition is actually very strong.
Yes.
Or has strong options.
It is true. I definitely think that this is probably going to be one that needs some improvement. I hope that we get to see it in action.
Oh, I'm sure we will.
Yeah. So let's talk about another class. What would you like to talk about next? It's your
Soldier.
turn. You got it. Oh my God, this one we were very rude to it when it first came out. I was very rude to it. I can't speak for you.
I mean, you were definitely ruder than I was.
Yeah, it's true. The soldier class is my hill to die on because that was my first character and it's my favorite 1E class because you know what? I just like hitting stuff. It's fine. I love that.
Yeah, it's good.
Go on.
I do like the initial art of the soldier. The man looks like a tin can. I love him. They just stuffed him in
Yeah.
that heavy armor. I'm very happy to see more melee options there.
Yeah, this is much better with melee.
I like the suppression mechanic. There was also a bit of confusion on this one, between area of effect and or area of effect and automatic shots. Not knowing if those were also specific things to the soldier or specific things of a type of a weapon. Which eventually the weapon section clarifies, But at first looking over it, it was like, wait a minute, is this a soldier ability or a weapon ability?
Yeah. I don't like a lot of the names of the fighting styles.
Yeah.
I think that they're kind of mid. Like the one thing that makes me I don't like is like action hero is ranged only. Like when I think of an action hero, like yeah, I do think of a guy with a gun, but like he's also going in and hitting people with weapons. I almost wish action hero was like the switch hit option where it was like any weapon you want to use, you know what I mean?
Well, I mean, if you think action heroes, I think somebody like John McClane, who primarily used a weapon, Rambo, you know, the Terminator, like they don't really actually get into scuffles if you think about it. And if they do, it's usually a bad time, right? Like you don't do it because it's fun.
I mean, when I think of action hero, I think of stuff like Indiana Jones, where he like uses a whip and punches people in the face.
Indiana Jones is also a kid's movie.
Yeah, but that's fine. This is a game that's supposed to be for 13 up.
Ah, oh, true.
Those are kids. Those are children!
Those aren't my action heroes, dang it.
That's fine. Well, then maybe that should be changed to accommodate all action heroes.
James's all action heroes.
Well, I mean, I feel like your action heroes are very well covered by things like Bombard and, you know, whatnot. I don't know.
Now, Bombard is a very specific type of hero. He's the guy that wields the minigun in Predator. Those guys always die.
I mean, that's fair.
they never come out on top. They always die.
That's true.
Close quarters gives punitive strike, which is basically an attack of opportunity, and I love seeing that for a control-based class. And also it inflicts the suppressed debuff that is like the hallmark of this class. So I really enjoy seeing that because it still seems like they really want you to try to do range stuff, and I'm just gonna fight that meta every day. I can't help it.
Sure.
And
I mean, we should have action hero use all weapons, then you could fight the range meta even.
Yeah. Yeah, and there's also the entire issue of, yeah, you're strong and you're a big buff person and you're the tank. I'm just going to go around you and hit somebody else.
Yeah. So, well, and that's the thing. Like, the designers don't want to do video game taunt mechanics, but that just means that you're just going to go around the man.
Yeah. Like, so, like, giving punitive strike means you get an AOP in a system where they're not very plentiful. And there's also a lot of things you can do based on, like, intimidation and stuff like that through the class, which I do think it's designed well. I think there's a lot of room here for things, which is fine. I think especially for this point in the game, there's enough here to try a couple different setups to see what you like. If you really want to keep doing the AOE stuff or the automatic stuff, like there's all sorts of silly stuff here, like shooting missiles with your guns and stuff.
Yeah, there's definitely some things where I feel like it's missing. I almost want to see soldiers with like availability for every weapon type, but like I get that can't necessarily be core. Like,
yeah,
you know, I would love to, because like one of the things for close quarters is that one of the reasons they get to add that extra rules text about suppressing people compared to the fighter, where the fighter doesn't get anything like that, is that they could a soldier can only do this with a two-handed weapon. They can only do punitive strikes with two-handed. So like I'd like to see options for one-handed. I'd like to see options for, you know, if I'm doing a pistolero stuff, I'd love to see more.
It's legit. I mean, the one-handed stuff, I think you're going to see a lot more of that in the operative. The operative has a lot of things that are, I mean, there's one of the things that lets you shoot without provoking. Mm-hmm. Like I think if you're going to want to do that gun and sword thing, you're probably not going to be a soldier. Like, I think that's just not going to fulfill that part of the fantasy.
Possibly. Yeah. Then I need a tank soldier. A tank operative, a tankerative.
I mean, looking over it, it's probably an option. But as far as the soldier goes, I think it has good mechanics. I think it's a good solid for somebody who's just getting into the game to get a base marshal who has some interesting abilities that are always going to be relevant. Because even though you get more overall move in a three action system, even though everybody's movement's cut down a little bit, that 10-foot penalty is to your movement speed.
And can we talk about how good the names are in the soldier options, though?
Oh yeah, yeah.
Like a lot of them. Fog of War. I'll be back. Like we were just talking about. I like dance where like you shoot someone at someone's feet, so they have to say hello to my little friend. Like, oh my god, the names for the soldier are good. Like, one thing I'll say about the Solarian and the Witchwarper, they have much more like magic BS names, and the soldier has like actually funny names. I love them. It's very good.
Yeah. So some stuff I think is cool, like the spell surge ammo sounds cool. Yeah. But yeah, the soldiers where you get into the kind of the memes, light them up. Also, the envoy has a fair amount that are kind of very nice tongue in cheek. special delivery.
Yeah. Hey, I wasn't going to pick the Envoy, but you said it, so let's do Envoy next.
Yeah, go ahead, you're up.
Yeah, okay. So Envoy is pretty cool. I like how the Envoy looks, and I got to play one of these during a playtest game last year at PAX Unplugged, so I have some familiarity. So basically you have a directive, which is like, it's get 'em, essentially. And as you level up, you can learn feats that give you more directives. And how it works is that every directive has like a base ability that it'll give benefits to. And then you also have a second ability called Lead by Example, where if you issue the directive and then take a specific action before the end of your turn, you apply another bonus, which is cool. I'd love that. They have an ability that essentially is a social version of the investigator's, oh my gosh, I can't think of the word for it. It's the investigator's on the case ability. It's called Size Up, where like you could kind of get a feel for people socially. It's basically on the case where you pick a case, but instead you pick a person and you like really figure out that one person. You can also get an ability called Saw It Coming, where you get to gain a circumstance bonus to your initiative roll because you saw that they were going to betray you, which is pretty cool. The Envoy can maintain many more assets with Size Up than the investigator can active cases, which is also really cool. You also get like a leadership style, which I like this because the Envoy didn't really have a grounding mechanic that told you like what that person was like in the world. And so like you have things like from the front, from the shadows, guns blazing, in the spotlight, hot shot, infosphere director, through desperate times. I like those. I wish a lot of those names were a bit more evocative of the concept. I only really feel like infosphere director really tells me what this is about, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But it's fine. Like, I actually like the mechanics. They're cool. All of them give you a free skill proficiency. They give you a bonus fee. And then eventually they give you a special, like, directive bonus that all of your directives get, which is cool.
Yeah.
What did you think of this class?
I thought the directives was confusing. just because it seemed like something that would be labeled as directives on the, like, level tree. And it is not. Uh-huh. So then, you know, you find out what they are, and then there's a tag. So eventually you get in there. But at first I'm like, how is a directive separate from a, just like something that you do or request of people? But, you know, it comes through. I like a lot of the kind of circumstantial bonuses of this because it really feels like you're filling out the sides of a party.
Yeah.
There are some things that are just generally just like get them and hurry, like things that just allow you to change the actual action economy that makes you a primary like person up front. But there's a lot of stuff that allows you to kind of rough or smooth the edges of a fight or conflict. Some of the stuff I think is maybe underwhelming, like a lot of the stuff that does hit points, just back of the napkin math and comparing to Pathfinder 2E, which is not perfect. It seems like you're going to be doing a lot of spot healing and a lot of actions for things that don't last very long. There's a lot of places in this book where some classes get temporary hit points that last a minute or at the length of a fight roll. There's a fair amount that are like once per 10 minutes for one round, you can get like 6 temporary hit points. And it's like, why is this a class feature?
Why
have I done this?
If I have one criticism, this class has a ton of actions. I feel like you're going to be in a situation where you have a million things to do and you're not going to be sure what you actually want. And a lot of them are going to be really niche in their application.
See, I'm fine. I'm fine with that.
Yeah. I think it's a matter of play style, you know?
Yeah. You might, I think it's easy to maybe build yourself into a corner based on, especially with newer players where they kind of pick stuff that they've seen, not realizing that they might not necessarily see that in the future. So either having like a retraining mechanic or just being a sane person and letting somebody train out of something would probably be helpful for that. Because some of this, I mean, there's like 4 things that are about initiative.
And
it's like, that's cool, I guess, if you want to be a master of initiative, but that's a lot of choices. Like, 1 or 2 of them should be fine.
Do you know what one thing I wasn't a huge fan of was? You remember how in first edition Starfinder, starting at 6th level, you could spend a resolve point and get them everything around you?
Mm-hmm.
That's an 18th level feat in this book.
Yeah, I did see that.
Yeah, I think that for the most part, this edition does a good job of avoiding we're going to make things that players want 18th level feats. But like this is one, and the other one is Diamatorish's grip for the soldier, where they can one-handed a two-handed weapon as an 18th level ability.
Oh,
it
yeah.
doesn't give any benefits. Like, you're just holding it in one hand to strike. It's like, that's cool. Why is this level 18? That doesn't make sense.
Because the action to move it to one hand doesn't cost an action as it does for most items in this game.
Oh my gosh, I know. It's 18th level feat, the ability they just can't get rid of. And it's like how two-handedness in this edition is like, oh, you have two sets of hands and you use one action to switch between the two sets. And it's like, oh my god, please. I don't like that minutia. Just stop.
Like, you could actually use two actions to change your hands to a second set of hands and then change a sword's grip from one-handed to two-handed. It's just like, oh, why is this an action use? This feels bad. And it never impacts enemies. Like, it impacts enemies, but most of the times when you are fighting enemies, their weapons come built in and it's not a problem.
I feel like it's a level of minutia that if you are a GM and forget it and a player calls you out on it, you're just going to be annoyed. And if you're a player and the GM calls you out on it, it's going to feel like a gotcha moment. It's not going to be a fun mechanic. Yeah. Like, it's complexity for the sake of complexity and adds nothing to the game. I agree with you.
I mean, it was just like Starfighter First Edition, and it's something that is also in Pathfinder 2E, so it's probably there to stay. But it's something that I will be promptly ignoring.
toss it in the garbage. It's fine.
Yeah, that, it's just not a fun mechanic.
Do you know what you shouldn't toss in the garbage, though?
Hmm?
Mystic.
You sure?
I like the... You don't like this class either?
No.
Why?
Why is everything healing?
That's what the original Mystic was. Remember, all Mystics got healing touch at first level?
Yeah, but that was a specific out-of-combat healing action, right? Like, you wouldn't use that in combat, right? A lot of what I really like about this class is when they use that pool to do other things. But there's not a lot of those things that allow it to do other things. A lot of them are variants on how to give people hit points because you're now a battery.
So what you're saying is that you would like this better if there were more ways you could, like, manipulate connections between people rather than just healing people.
Yeah, and spend your pool of hit points. Yeah,
I think that's fair, because, like, in Pathfinder 2nd Edition, a cleric can choose between heal and harm. Like, I do think that, like, so I think that this is probably the most mechanically interesting healing class that Starfinder, or that is that in this system, has done. Like, I think this is cooler than the cleric, because the cleric just gets big numbies. Like, that's all they get from having more spells than anyone else. And the oracle, life oracle, is a pain in the butt because it's focus spell dependent, which means you get three per combat and then so, like, this one feels to me that, like, it can keep going for a while, and it's got some cool stuff it can do with transferring vitality. But, like, I also agree that, like, if I'm a Mystic of the Devourer, why am I healing my friends? Why am I not using my connection to eat my enemies?
Yeah,
I feel you.
If you want to be a healer, there's a lot of fun ways to do healing here. I will get that, but I just remember playing the second edition cleric and just using all of my actions to heal people, because that's how the math worked in Pathfinder second edition at that time.
To be fair, you guys also did jump into a danger pit after a bell was rung and got swarmed on all sides.
There were many times where I just stood there and did other things while we played that game, because my actions were all just healing the person getting punched. One of the things that I do think is, like, a fun play on the transfer is cloud storage, where you have a null space chamber that the whole party has access to, and you can pay the transfer cost of it to access it, because that's something players always want to do. Oh, somebody has something, let me go grab it.
You know?
That is a fun mechanic. I like that. I don't think healing is wrong. Healing's not bad. Don't take this the wrong way. But when I see a class and all the options are about giving hit points back to people, it's A, why are we allowing things to survive long enough that we're getting beaten on that this matters? B, is if the character that you're playing's abilities can be run by an algorithm and get the same result, which is A, getting health back, I guess you have fun. I don't.
Yeah. I think that it would be cool if every connection had its own transfer vitality type ability. Like, if your transferring was based on the connection that you had. So, like, if you're a healing connection, then you were sending hit points. And if you were a shadow connection, you were, like, maybe sending illusions to people, and that was, like, interfering with their ability to hit. Like, there's a lot of cool stuff that it could do that is cooler than what it is. I agree with you on that.
But there are fun ideas here. Like, at 12th level, there's Convert Tempo, which, if you're part of the rhythm connection, is once per minute. You could just walk across the battlefield and refill your pool based on half your move speed. So you can literally dance yourself into more hit points and more U resources, which is fun. That's cool.
Yeah, and it's worth noting that, like, Perfect Harmony is an ability. Like, it's Perfect Harmony is a mystic ability where when you use Transfer Vitality, something cool happens. That's a 19th level ability. This is another case of why do I have to wait until the game is over to do the cool thing, which I think is a legitimate critique you can make of this system, not just Starfinder, but like Pathfinder, where like they like to make you wait very long to do the cool thing. It's almost like trying to like string along your engagement, but like there's no reason to do that. You're not getting paid for the longer I level up.
Yeah, I mean, part of it too is just dealing with the beginning edition of a game. You are trying to get people in on a base level. You're still figuring out what people are kind of smart and dumb about and like what player habits are. Because, like, I mean, you look at any game at its inception, like the creatures that you're facing and your abilities versus what happens later in the game. Because later in the lifespan, usually a lot of those abilities, you get access to something similar to them sooner.
Yeah.
As they go, actually, this wasn't that bad. We just learned how to make better encounters for this, or how to get players to write better encounters. That.
But yeah.
Like, when I hear people complain about a gunslinger, it's like, have you ever heard of a monk? If your players are bullying you with a gunslinger, you just pull a monk. Like, you can do this as a GM. Like, just get some more system mastery. But I totally get it.
Yeah. I do think that your critique on, like, having a whole class be basically based around healing with that core mobility is probably a good one. Because, like, not even the cleric and the oracle are really like that. Like,
yeah.
I mean, you have your healing font, but, like, it's not as ingrained in the class as the vitality
network is. And some people are going to just want to do healing. And that's totally fine.
I like healing.
Fine. Yeah, that's fine. I just want to outdo the healing. Look, if you just beat something up very hard and very fast, healing doesn't matter.
Man, imagine a transfer vitality where, like, you're taking a couple points from, like, nearby people every turn. Like, oh, I did one damage to all those guys, and I spread that healing.
Yeah.
Like, there's cool stuff you could do in that design space, and it needs to be broadened beyond this very basic. It's almost like, I want to be the huggy best friend polycule master class, and it's like, you could be more than that. You could do cooler stuff than just that. Like, broaden this a bit, please.
Yeah. Yeah, there is that feat for void damage. You are right.
Yeah.
Considering Warlock. But the idea is there. I would also guess that at this point, you probably want to test how the healing numbers work from that and see how they work with players and what they do right and wrong with it. Because it is not a complicated system, but there are some missteps.
I agree. Yeah, I think that's fair. I don't even know what level that void one is. I feel like that one also falls into the why am I waiting until 10th level or higher to get this cool thing. But regardless, yeah, like I don't even know off the top of my head which one that would be, like, for doing void damage with it. But regardless, if we look at the last class we have to look at is the operative.
I think the operative's good.
Oh, I don't like the operative.
What? Okay, so the operative gets specializations like before. They don't get the trick attack, but it's replaced by something called aim, where you look through it, it helps with, you know, precision damage, and, you know, you get to overcome some cover and stuff. You get exploits for part of that, and exploits are kind of kept over, like, language from first edition Starfinder. Mm-hmm. Operative exploits, yeah. So, like, I like that because there's consistency in that. I know immediately what I'm... Maybe I like it because it's familiar in a way that I can wrap my head around it. Also, there's a lot of different ways to wield a gun. This class loves wielding guns along with other weapons. Mm-hmm. You don't always have to do snipers. There's a lot of things for using small arms and using, well, that handguns, small weapons, basic weapons, I forget the term, as well as bigger weapons. I think there's a lot of, I don't think there's a lot of, like, magic stuff here, which is fine, but there's also great names like 360 No Scope, Bullet Fever.
I like, my favorite name is Death Blossom, Alpha Reaper. I don't think it's actually called Death Blossom, but it's Death Blossom. It's very good. So the only thing I don't like about this class is that I think that aim does too much damage compared to the amount of work that other classes need to do to get that same level of bonus damage.
Mm.
If you are aiming with a pistol that is a, you know, a one-handed weapon, you are essentially doing that pistol's weapon damage twice. Like, and I think that, like, it's easy to forget how impactful a D4 can be when you're low level or when you're high level, but, like, I at low level, I think it's a lot. I would rather see it be a static bonus. A static bonus feels more like aimy to me. Or I'd even like it if it was like roll your damage dice twice and use the better one for your weapon damage dice. I think that what it does is a little, that is too much. But with that in mind, I really like basically everything else about this class. I just wanted to be contrarian to you because you were contrarian to like every class I said.
No, it was only two of them. And, you know,
I only picked three, James.
Skill issue?
Oh my God, no. My skill.
I'm fine with it because you're going to have lower usability of those pistols because they're just small and smaller. And also, the class doesn't do a lot else.
Yeah.
It doesn't have the amount of skills that it had in the in 1E. It doesn't have much magic. It does have some cool, mostly based around movement and getting to shoot more and different. But, like, it's not, you don't really increase the width of things you're able to do.
Definitely. And, you know, the one thing, too, is they really cut the number of skills this class gets compared to, like, the Starfinder, where, like, you just have every skill. Now it's you get 3 plus your int and 1 from your specialization. That, honestly, they could probably cut that to 2 plus int and it would still be fine, but, like, whatever.
I will, like, say, 16th level feat, reload as a free action, throw that out.
Yeah, why is that?
It's a feat, a 16th level feat. Once per round, you can reload an action, reload as a free action. Unless that is not capped and they want you to use artillery or something.
It says frequency once per round.
Yeah. So that's what I mean. Like, unless you had something that took a long time to reload, usually, and now you can reload as a free action, you know, that might be cool as part of a build. But just reloading a weapon as a free action, as a 16th level feat.
So we both agree that there's a lot of places where there are things that should be lower that are higher, and it's like, why?
Yeah, so once again, unless there's something around that point that takes multiple turns to reload, as somebody who's played siege weapon characters because I have brain damage, you know, then that feat becomes very powerful.
That's fair. So, I mean, we're basically coming up on time. It's about and at the hour mark. We're like 3 minutes away, and we haven't talked about skills, feats, equipment, or spells.
That's okay. I had very few thoughts about skills and feats. There's a lot of skill feats. There's a lot of feats. It didn't seem like anything was missing. Like everything you need for this point in the game.
Yeah, I think that computers and piloting are fine. I get why you need to have piloting in the base rulebook, but it feels really weird to me to have piloting in the book with no vehicles. So, like, like, I get it, but I also, like, there's no vehicles and starships aren't going to be in this book, from what I've heard. So, like, I don't understand why we need this, but I also think that for whatever reason, like, Paizo doesn't want to add new skills after the first core rulebook, which is wild to me. Like, just add the new skills.
It's future-proofing. Also, the operative has a thing that's based around driving. Just also throw that one out. That is for an NPC. You're never going to use that.
Or make that a skill feat. There's so many in this book. Just add another one.
Yeah. The book also gives you what are trained and not trained actions, which I'm a big fan of, so you don't have to look in the Pathfinder 2E chart, because I don't know if any of them changed. I didn't bother to look. Sure. I like that.
What did you think about all the new feats? Because I think this is, like, it's got, like, a significant number of brand new feats in this book.
There was a lot of them.
Ah, I see. I think there's a lot of cool ones. I like the one where you are essentially telling an inappropriate joke and that makes somebody, like, distracted. I also like the one where you are an internet troll on somebody and it ruins their day. That's pretty funny.
Yeah, I feel like as an envoy, you're going to have access to a lot of these.
Yeah. Yeah, no, totally. You're going to have so many of these feats. It's tough for me to say how good a lot of these are, because in my experience in first edition and second edition Pathfinder, like, skill feats are only as useful as your ability to predict what's going to come up in your pre-written adventure path are, you know? Mm-hmm. Or you could be me and I literally shout at Dustin, "I have biographic eye!" over and over again. And I, like, force him to give me information. Like, that's one of the things. Like, there's a lot of, like, little things to give you stuff for your skills to do, but, like, a lot of it never comes up unless the GM designs for it. And that's fine if you're doing a home game, but if you're doing a pre-written adventure path, well, I guess you just better guess right.
Yep.
But there's, like, a lot of stuff that, like, works in combat too. And, like, that's weird to me. Like, with a second level feat for acrobatics called Sniper Stance, where you don't take a penalty to attack rolls with guns while prone, which is great. I love it. I like that it's a skill feat even too. Yeah. But, like, it's weird how disparate some of these are. Like, one of the big complaints in second edition Pathfinder is that athletics and and intimidate our intimidation are like the super skills, because you can do like they work so well in combat. Like one of the intimidate skills is you literally scare a low level enemy to death. So like, okay. Now I know you said that you wanted to talk about equipment, specifically guns, right?
Yeah, I mean, I could go quick.
Do it.
I like how they redid the weapon system, where there's just 7 tiers of weapons, basically. It goes with the rune system, I'm guessing, from 2E. It's pretty equivalent. I don't like the tracking is used as the to hit bonus. I once again thought that was a weapon trait.
Yeah.
Like analog or something like that, because I believe tracking is also a trait in Starfinder 1E. So that threw me off. But I also like that they went through the links of explaining how to upgrade weapons between different rarities or complexities, because that is something I think was very much needed, and also that things aren't sold for half. Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank God.
I think that for weapons, that tracking exists to try to justify that item bonus to attack rolls without all weapons needing to be magical. Yeah. Like that's what I'm thinking that's supposed to be.
Oh, 100%. Like it makes sense.
I think it's fine. I don't think that the way that it's added is great. I would like to see a better explanation for what it is than how it's implemented. Like I don't like it being tied to buying high, like, you know me, I don't like JRPG equipment. So like just saying like, oh, this is an item level 5 gun that has this. I'd rather you just tell me I can add. Oh no, they did change that. Yeah. Never mind. I like that.
I was waiting for you.
I take that back. My bad. I was skimming through and I was like, oh yeah, they did change that. They listen. Yeah. They listen.
Yeah. Also armor specializations. It kind of sucks that they're limited to certain types of armor, but armor with different types of materials, and they're consistent across materials. Very cool. I like that a lot.
Yeah. I like the new grenades. They're cool.
Grenades. What happens when you miss?
I don't know. What happens when you miss?
You don't attack a square with grenades. You attack a target with an area.
They changed
weapon.
It?
Yes.
So do they still explode?
I don't know. It does not tell you what happens when you miss with a grenade.
It says that it uses the area fire action. So like maybe we have to look at the area fire ability.
I don't know if that told me about the square or missing there. Because in Starfinder First Edition, they go off a certain amount based on stuff.
So it's weird because I scrolled back up to weapons and area fire. It says it's a 2-action ability with the area and attack traits. But in grenades, it's listed as a 1-action ability. Maybe that needs to be clarified for like base-by-base.
No, basis. It says that in the grenade part as to why that is.
Oh. Mm-hmm. Oh, okay. That makes sense. It says any creatures in the area must... It says you hit each creature in the designated area with a range attack equal to the weapon's range increment or the designated radius of the explosion. You can position the center anywhere within your first range increment, and creatures in the area must succeed at a basic reflex save against your class DC, plus if the weapon's tracking value, the damage is area damage. Creatures who critically fail at the saving throw. So it's a saving throw. In chat, Dustin is saying that there are no attack rolls with grenades. You just throw them.
Oh, see that? It says it's an area attack, which...
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, so the terminology is confusing, is what you're saying.
Yeah, because I was looking it up. I'm like, well, what happens when you miss?
Yeah, gotcha. All right. He says that there's an attack roll with missiles.
I mean, that makes sense. I mean, those are powered and directed.
Yeah. Area attack doesn't use attack rolls. Auto fire does. You're going to need to change those names, dude.
If you do, just clarify that it does not need an attack roll.
Yeah. And then there's like lots of good armor upgrades. I think those were I didn't see anything under armor upgrades that like surprised me. I thought they were sensible. Good.
Yeah, they were cool. They were a holdover. Some of them feel like a holdover from previous versions. They're cool.
Yeah.
The new system for augments. I'm glad that there's a note that says this is kind of weird. We're not sure if this is how we're going to keep it because it is weird. It's based on your constitution modifier, basically 1 plus your con mod. And it doesn't limit how many slots or alterations you can make to one slot. So it's cool you can multiple augment something, but it is limiting to, you know, your characters that aren't going to be con based, which is a trade-off.
True. I guess if we ever see the evolutionists come back, we should expect them to be a con class.
Yeah, or that might just change.
Could be,
because
it's weird, because you know what, you wouldn't remember this, but it reminds me of how magic item attunement worked in Path of the second edition playtest, like originally. because like how it used to be is the number of magic items you could attune to was based on your charisma.
Yeah, I remember. And I did playtest with you.
It was you did do the playtest with me. That's right. Mm-hmm. It was very unpopular. It got struck down. I'm surprised it's here.
Yeah, but I mean, this is at least a little bit different in that it is a small part of a character as opposed to magic items. Like Pathfinder is kind of about the magic items, right? Like
true. Yeah.
These are weird augments. I mean, I don't see it. I didn't see any of them that were as kind of like powerful or crazy as some of the previous ones, but that's fine for now.
So there's only two chapters we haven't done our shallow dive into, and that's spells and deities. And I kind of think we don't really need to talk about the setting that much. You should read the setting and decide for yourself if you like it. I think the new changes are cool for the updates to the setting. So let's just talk about spells and then wrap up the video.
Spells? I looked over them. They're spells.
They're magic.
Like there's an adequate amount of spells for things that you would want to do. I didn't feel like there was anything particularly missing or particularly stand out from other spell perspectives. I could probably dig into it and find stuff I think is really cool, but I was mostly just looking to make sure that things could do the things that I wanted them to with the actions that I think they could, and everything was kind of there. I didn't see any like glaring omissions.
Yeah. I would like to tell you about some hilarious spells with some time.
Sure.
Carcinization. You turn someone into a crab. It's great. I love it. There is, I really liked the name of the spell is Eldritch Wrath. That's it. It's a fourth level spell where you just blast everyone with mental damage. I just think that's very cool.
Mind Thrust.
Yeah, Mind Thrust is cool. Also, Eldritch Lance is a cantrip, which I am shocked doesn't exist in Pathfinder. It's basically just a spell attack that does mental damage to somebody. Like, ooh, Eldritch Lance. I would like it better if it was just like force damage or like raw magic damage. Because to me, Eldritch Lance is basically like the Warlock Eldritch Blast in D&D. I'd love it for it to be that and not mental, but it doesn't really matter to me.
It's fine.
It's totally fine. I don't think that's a critique. It's an Alex preference, which is
It is interesting seeing mental damage as a like mental as a damage type. Is that something in Pathfinder 2E?
Yep, it is. Mm-hmm. Creatures that don't have brains are generally immune to it.
That's rude.
Yeah, I mean, it's their fault for not having brains. I don't know.
That's rude. That's rude to like your things with like decentralized nervous systems.
It reminds me of this like meme from Pokemon where like these two Pokemon like abduct James, Ash, Pikachu, and Jesse, or it's Jesse, James, Ash, and Pikachu, and then they've like mind controlled with psychic powers Meowth, and like they're like, why is everyone in the town under your control? Because we put them under our control. Why aren't we affected? Because idiots are hard to mind control.
it just kind of feels like that. It's like rude. You don't count.
It's really good. Supercharged weapon is back. I like it. You can heighten it for more damage. There's a lot of even newer spells. Like I can tell that Dustin wrote some spells in here because Time's Edge is his favorite spell in our Starfinder game, and it's here. So that's pretty cool. There's an advantage to working for the company. You get to see your favorite stuff at the core rulebook, let me tell you. As someone who's writing his own core rulebook for his own game, just do what you want. It's great.
I did just notice this cantrip, which is Measure, where you just figure out like the length of something, and it's like you can use Grand or Cane power to do that, or talk to somebody who's built something.
You don't need magic, just talk to a carpenter, Bobby.
Yeah, a journeyman would be able to tell you that, but okay. I guess the nerds need magic for it.
I like how X-ray vision is uncommon, because that means that the GM can say no, you don't have access to the ability that will let you be a creep.
Thank you.
Yeah,
you know, there's always a discussion on whether you legislate player ability and what do you call it, behavior in the base rule system, or if you do that at the table. Some things I think are better to do in the rule book.
I think that a mix of both is good. I think that that some things where you know this could be a problem and you put that rule, that legislation in, and then some things should be a player conversation.
As somebody who is GM for people that you shamefully overdressed, and I have to say, hey, the spell doesn't work like that.
That spell. So then the other thing that you have is you have what's called focus spells. And these are basically spells that your class gives you. And you have a pool of 3 points that refreshes when you use 10 minutes to refocus. So you could generally count on having most of these like in every encounter you're in. They're pretty cool. They all tie to different like class options. So like if you're a mystic and you choose the elemental connection, you'll get elemental Nova. Or elemental barrier, and like they all seem good. It's the kind of thing where like you can't really tell how good a spell is until you actually sit down and play with it.
Yeah,
but they seem great. I like all the healing ones. Like there's like a bring someone back from dying ability. There's like a explosion of healing energy. I like all the Witch Warper ones, like alternate outcome, parallel forms, like just changing stuff. A time loop is another cool one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I did want to double back grenades real quick because I just remembered this. You can bank them off walls.
Oh, I do like that.
That's just
bounce, bounce.
That's just cool.
Yeah, just bounce the grenade. Do it.
Yeah.
That basically brings us to the end. Like, it's pretty. What'd you think of Lasala coming back as a core deity?
I think it's cool. I like Lasala, especially after the whole thing. I mean, there's some other stuff like traps and environments and all that stuff, but
I think it's funny because like you could totally tell that every single person in that on the Starfinder team was a Pathfinder Society player or like developer, because everybody likes Lasala who's played Pathfinder Society. That's just the truth.
Yeah, you know, it's the comeback story, right?
Yeah, it's X thousand years in the making. Very good. Now, final thoughts about all the stuff we talked about today.
I'm actually very surprised in my feeling about the game and how it's changing. Maybe it's just because the numbers are already flatter in Starfinder, that seeing that change into Starfinder 2E doesn't have the same impact as seeing it change in Pathfinder 1E. Because those are functionally different games, and I will fight anybody on any hill about that.
Yeah, definitely.
I think that there is a lot of room for expansion for choices. I'm never going to say something is actually bad. I'm just going to say it's not for me, because some things aren't just meant for you. And this is just the beginning of what they plan to offer and what they get feedback on, right?
Definitely.
I do want to see more ways to cast spells. It is the same. It's like, oh, you learn spells like sorcerers. It's cool. Like,
yeah,
you have options with things like the Technomancer. Like, you can have them do it like how occultists did it, where different bits of tech give you different access to spells. Like, there's so many cool ways to expand on it.
That would be really cool if you could have like a couple of different types of like tech lore, and like, oh, I have this gadget that lets me do this, and this gadget lets me do that. Like, that would be cool.
Yeah,
so hopefully they're doing something like that.
Yeah, so that's maybe my only big critique overall about it. It's just like the spellcasting is kind of, the spells themselves are fine, but the spellcasting mechanics are kind of boring. They're base.
Yeah,
they're a base level for an RPG system, which is completely adequate and in line with first edition Starfinder. So
yeah, and honestly, what you would expect in a core rulebook would be I think that this is good. I like it. I think that a lot of the areas where we were very critical of the new edition got ironed out. It looks pretty fine. Like, at one point, Dustin and I talked, we play games together, and he asked me what I thought, and I was like, this is what I expected. And then he was like, oh, I was like, that's not a bad thing. like meeting my expectations is good. Like, this is what I was expecting, and I was not disappointed. That should mean I'm a happy customer, right?
Yeah. I mean, there's some things that are like annoying, like the handedness thing, but A, I ignore it because you don't pay my sub.
Yeah.
And B, there's always going to be stuff like that.
Yeah, definitely. I also think that like we talked about, there's some places where like feat effects are underwhelming at high levels, and they're genuinely good ideas, like Diameter Ash's Grip, that should be lower level. Some little like nitpicks or like personal preferences that I wouldn't have done, but that doesn't matter. Yeah. So, yeah. I think generally I'm excited, and I think this is a good time to talk about what the No Direction coverage for Starfinder is, second edition, is going to look like. So basically our plan is, for the next couple months, we are basically doing a 2E takeover of the network in September, at the end of the month, because as everybody knows, we do our shows at the end of the month. So on the 25th, we're doing a Creating Characters in Second Edition. We have special guests Ryan Costello and Lauren Sig coming on to make characters with us, because we are going to be running two actual play shows throughout this month. The first one is going to be on October 30th, and the second one is going to be on November 27th. So the day before Halloween and the day before Thanksgiving in both cases.
Man, we're really good at this.
Yeah, I know, we're great. It's like we planned this. And on October 30th, that show, it's I will be GMing both games, and I'm going to put James, Ryan, Lauren, and a redacted secret guest to the quest in One Shot at Shelley's, a Starfinder second edition adventure. I'm sure it won't be themed around Halloween.
It definitely won't be the Bite of 387.
No, definitely not. And then in November, I am going to be serving James, John, Randall, and Rob a heaping helping of pain in Thankless Devouring, a Starfinder second edition adventure that I will be writing for it.
I'm excited. I still have to figure out some of the setup part, but I'm very excited.
Yeah, no, it's going to be fun. So the idea is that James, Ryan, and Lauren will make characters in the first show. You'll get to see them in the second show. Then you'll get to see another set in the third one. As I'm sure you could tell, the Thankless Devouring will be a Thanksgiving adventure themed around the Cult of the Devourer, because I love puns and it's a perfect timing. And then in December, for our final episode in this five episode special run, we are going to reflect on the Starfinder second edition playtest and our first impressions. I have invited a special guest to be on that show. We'll see if they're able to do it, because it's very far out. No problem, promises. But if this is the shallow dive, that one is where we're going to look at our two games and we're going to talk about our thoughts on second edition. And it should line up. It's not going to be exactly, it's going to be cutting it close, but it's right around the time when the second edition playtest results are due, if I recall correctly. So it's almost like we planned this. Yeah. We did it.
Yeah, the December one is not the last Wednesday. It's the third Wednesday, because the fourth Wednesday is Christmas, and I'm not doing a show on Christmas.
Nah, I didn't even ask. I was like, I'm not doing a show on Christmas.
Oh man, Christmas is on a Wednesday? Oh, my work's stupid.
Oh, it's gonna be bad. Well, on the plus side, we'll have off on Wednesday, but so. So, James, where should people go if they want to speculate on who our special guest is for our Halloween episode?
NoDirection.com.
Yeah, because they can find something there that's really great. It's our Discord, where we talk. You can guess with all the other people who you think our special guest is going to be. I know. They've already confirmed. It's good.
Yeah, it's there. It's still there. And thank you all the patrons that help support getting everybody set up on the network there.
Yeah, you guys are awesome. We could probably do this if we didn't have patrons, but you guys make us want to do this. So thank you for giving us the motivation to be on this show.
And it makes it a lot easier when we get new people. It helps get their setup and make sure that we give good content, not just Xbox mics. Although there's some love for that, but not what everybody wants to hear.
It's true. Not what everyone wants to hear.
Also, hosting is expensive.
It is very, especially for and also editing. Like, James does so much work. Oh, you meant hosting content, not hosting the show.
Yeah. No, the actual like web hosting for the like 15 years of this of the website. It's very old.
Oh,
it
my
is a,
gosh!
It is a very old website that is very large at this point.
It's antique. It's so old. I've been working on an article for something that I need to do, and I've put off for way too long just because life has gotten in the way, but. I was looking through like the sheer amount of content we have now. It's like almost 400 pages of like articles and things being published. I'm like, oh my God.
Yeah. There's a lot of stuff. Look, I've been here for the last like 6 years.
Yeah.
and that's.
Oh no.
That's, yeah. Yeah.
I'm August not even, is like, my
half lifespan.
I joined in 2014. This is my 10th year anniversary.
Oh, congratulations.
Oh my God.
You're old.
I wish we were Blizzard. If we were Blizzard, I'd be getting like a Frostmourne or something to hang on my wall.
What is a No Direction Frostmourne?
It's just a compass. It's just a regular compass that goes on my wall. Gosh, I hope Ryan hears this and he's like, huh, what should I send Alex? I know, a player character. For One Shot at Shelley's, that's what I should send Alex. And if you guys want to send me something for my 10th year anniversary at No Direction, you should tune in next time and check out our Starfinder coverage. But until then, James and I need you to go beyond with No Direction.